Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
I've always wanted to fuck my bullies or people who look like they would bully me. And
yes,
I'm not
exactly.
Proud of that.
I'm a little proud of that.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're bisexual? Yes, we've got a bisexual legend on the podcast this week. Her name is Jen Winston, and gosh, she is not only so smart, she's an author, but also gives some really thought-provoking conversations about the bisexuality of it all, and some really good pop culture stuff. All I will say is her answer for Who Made Her Bi, it's a movie that I have not thought of in over a decade, and I think it's going to unlock some thoughts for you. I also will tell you, you have to stick around for the end of the episode, because she brings up a memory that I really was formative. I'm not going to tell you what it was, but I will just say Carmen Electra and the movie Scary Movie. Which I guess I did just kind of say it. But also, before we get into that, I want to tell you, I'm recording this from New York City. Can you believe? We've had a lovely trip. We saw Into the Woods with like Sarah Bareilles, Neil Patrick Harris, Heather Headley. A lot of you responded to my Instagram story about the cast recording of Aida. Also did things for you. And I want to thank you for that solidarity. It was unbelievable. I mean, I cried and I cried and I cried. Tonight we're seeing Funny Girl, the first performance since it received a singular Tony nomination, and it was not for Beanie Feldstein. So stay tuned for what the energy in that theater is going to be like. If you're not a theater queen, I do have a crazy story. We went to a gay bar last night, which was a Monday, and so it was naturally like not a crazy night. There was one guy that was being very, dare I say, assaulty. He kept trying to physically come in between me and the friends. Fine. We pushed him out. We survived. What happened after, though, is we had a late night snack at a burger joint in Hell's Kitchen, and this guy next to me is like clearly going through a moment. He apparently uttered at one point, "I really want to get into a fight." Luckily, I didn't hear it because I was really zoned in on my burger and cookies and cream shake. Next thing I know, the guy gets up. The restaurant was behind me. I hear a kerfuffle. Turns out he had thrown his drink onto another scary man, stormed out of the bar. Well, we're reeling from that. We say goodbye to our friend. We walk to the subway, and that very same guy who had thrown the drink was being held down by bouncers at another bar next door, and he had a bloody nose and got into another fight. I know this is not New York-centric. I know people are going through it in every city across the country, but y'all, hold your loved ones closely and just take your SSRIs, which we also talk about in this episode. But let's get into it with Jen Winston. She has an amazing book called Greedy. She also has incredible knowledge about character actresses. She really did her research and came prepared with a list. Make sure you follow Jen. I give all of her socials in the description, along with subscribing to the podcast if you have not, and follow us at Gay Ass Podcast on Instagram. It means the world that you are listening, and I'm just so gosh darn lucky to have you. Jen Winston's on That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the author of Greedy, Notes from a Bisexual Who Wants Just Too Much, and also the bi-monthly newsletter. Jen, thank you so much for coming on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. You are a gosh darn star.
Oh my gosh. I mean, that's like the most vocal inflection I've ever been introduced with, so thank you.
Okay, wow. Thank you for acknowledging the range
of the
vocals.
Yeah, you have the range. Which is like, was my favorite meme like 6 years ago, and I feel like it never left.
It feels like a lifetime ago, but
we still say it, but I remember like I was there on the origin
Day. Oh, yeah. You were like on the Mayflower of She Has the Ranges memeography.
Yeah, that's me.
I've decided before you got into this recording that every new episode of this podcast, I'm just going to introduce a new segment. And today's segment is called Here's What I'm Insecure About Today. maybe let me do a different melody.
I love it, though.
Do you like that? Let me do... This is what I'm insecure about today. Okay, that's a little brighter. Here's what it is, and I'm being so open and honest with you. I'm worried that my voice sounds like I was crying because I just had therapy, and I was.
I mean, you're masking it well with the melodies. I guess singing is like an effective tactic.
And the masky intonation of my voice, even.
Oh, yeah. Yes, there you go. Mask, double entendre.
No, double entendre. I really was crying in therapy, and I'm just so grateful to my therapist. First of all, don't we feel so lucky to be able to cry in certain scenarios where we don't feel judged for crying? It's kind of the joy of therapy. Are you currently in a therapy situation?
I'm in three. I'm like currently seeing three therapists.
Okay, brag.
Yeah, I know. It literally is like all of the money I've saved by not leaving my house during COVID has gone to that. So,
which is an investment, Jen. We are investing in our past, our present, and our future.
You're right. We are.
If I may be so bold as to ask, is it like therapy in terms of like psychology?
Oh, actually, I guess technically I'm in four. I was seeing one therapist for 7 years, and she was a psychiatrist, and she prescribed me Adderall. Okay. And so we had like she had me like golden handcuffed to her, essentially. Like I couldn't leave because she's like my Adderall doctor. Also, I have very like severe ADHD, as I'm sure will make itself known as we talk more and I like ramble. But I just forgot where we were. Anyway.
Types of therapy.
Yes. So she was my therapist for 7 years. And then during COVID, she just like disappeared a little bit. But I still like needed her to write my prescription. So
wait, are we talking like true crime documentary?
No,
disappeared, or she just like full on ghosted you?
But that is like the plot of a novel that I'm working on. It's like a disappearing therapist, but partially inspired by her just like going off the grid. But I mean, she like comes up every so often. I kind of think maybe she was having a hard time. She would like cancel last minute. And then,
no, Jen, no.
I know, but I love her. I've been seeing her for 7 years.
Of course we love her, and I know some therapists who listen to this podcast have messaged in and stuff, and I have a friend of mine who is a therapist, and I often forget the mental health needs that therapists themselves have. Do you know what I mean? Like, you only think about, of course, idolizing them and like thanking them for what they do for us, but then they do themselves. Yeah. Like, can you imagine a therapist taking a mental health day and then all of their clients are like, fuck.
Totally.
But like, they need that too. They're human beings.
I've been watching The Sopranos. I'm like late to it, but I've been like watching it for the first time. And I find it really interesting. They talk about like the therapist has her own therapist. And she like talks about how she doesn't want to let her clients down, specifically Tony Soprano, because like bad things will happen. So they do explore that.
Lisa Kudrow had a show where she was doing like remote therapy on HBO.
Oh my God, what was that?
And I remember Meryl did an episode of that. And I know there are shows about therapists, but like a missing therapist storyline. Jen,
thank you. Well, patent pending.
Patent pending, babe. Okay, continue on about all the different therapists.
Oh yeah. Okay, so that's one. So because she started like ghosting me a little bit, I was like, I need someone to like talk to more regularly. So I have like a different therapist who's not like a psychologist, but I see her. And then I have a couples therapist, which I love. In fact, in the novel, I literally have written no pages of this novel. So I'm like,
please,
here's
the
plot.
Into the universe.
But yeah, in the novel, it's a couples therapist. And it's like about relationships in the broadest way possible. But I like love couples therapy and would recommend it to anyone.
I think that couples therapy definitely is... at least for every single couple to go to at least one time. Mm-hmm. Matt and I have gone I think only really once or twice. And I think in our future, we'll love to go again. And I have friends who are in it. I think like it is naive to think that any relationship that is a long-term relationship is not going to need a little tune-up. Like, yeah. There's a commercial for something that... It's probably one of those therapy websites, like BetterHelp or whatever it is. And it's a guy that has a... He's working out at the gym and he has that, like, weight against his chest. And another guy is like, oh, do you need... Can I help you with that?
They're like, ask
and
twice.
He's like, No, I'm just going to figure this out myself. And the guy's like, well, no, you need help. It's like basically saying that therapy is just, if clearly you need help in any way, like, you're of course going to do what you need to get that help. All this to say, obsessed that you're in couples therapy.
Yeah. But when it's mental health, like, people don't talk about it, you mean?
Right. Basically. Exactly. They're like, yeah, they're just like, yeah, it's mental health. So it's, I can't see it. And so I'm not going to do anything to actually help the thing that I definitely need.
Yeah. The one I thought you were going to say is there's another one where it's like, do you need help? And the person's like, no, no. And then it's like, do you need help? And then they're like, actually, yeah. And it was like about asking twice.
Oh,
it was specifically for men that like, PSA campaign.
The commercial I saw was all men too, which I think it's all just they're trying to like communicate to men that it is okay.
Cry.
Oh my God. Yeah. Wait, there. Every time I watch like a reality show or anything where a guy is like so desperately trying not to let a single tear leave his face, it's like, girly.
Yeah. Yeah.
You are allowed to experience a spectrum of human emotion. And it's so frustrating to me that has been put into men's minds. And my gorgeous three nephews, my future children, if they happen to be male, I'm not going to make them cry every second of the day, but I'm going to encourage them to just like, if you got to, you got to.
Exactly. And it like doesn't make you less of a person in any way.
Exactly.
It's like, I've been reading a lot about how, I mean, you probably have an experience like this, how most people who are socialized as men are there, you can remember a time when you were told that you shouldn't be crying.
Oh yeah, God, that's so interesting. I'm trying to go back because I know there has been those times 100%. But thankfully, I'm not. I don't have the one in my memory banks that like haunts me, because I think for me, growing up, knowing I was so different in so many ways, I think I was just like, add it to the list. What else am I supposed to do?
Yeah.
I want to wear this towel as a dress. I can't do that. Fuck. Oh, I can't cry. Add it to the list.
Yeah.
I can't like go to get my mom's nails done with her, and I would sit next to her and like kind of secretly want to put one on, and then finally I would like paint one of my nails, and like, oh, I'm not supposed to do that. It's like,
yeah,
add it to the gosh darn list.
Yeah.
And speaking of lists, you have just a scheduling nightmare of therapy every other day.
Oh, and I do have one more. This one is an ADHD coach specifically who like saved my life. I was like looking for a life coach, and then I was like, that's not what I need. I need someone who can help me understand what I'm trying to do during the day. And we literally spent a year trying to get me to implement this thing called a weekly review, which is just like where I look at my tasks for the upcoming week. Like, I'm sure most people who like have together lives do this. But I just can't. I'm starting to be, it's been literally a year, and I'm starting to be like, okay, that aligns with my values. That like helps my future self, you know, but it's so hard.
So is it about a to-do listing, but in a grander sense of it? Or is it kind of like day to day what you need to do, and then also like, and getting yourself to do them? Like what has been the barrier between the list and the doing of them?
Well, people with ADHD procrastinate a lot because we like function around dopamine hits. Which, like, once I learned that, it, like, really explained a lot to me, because I play so many online games. Like, it's a huge vice, which is, like, the most embarrassing vice.
It's better than murdering people.
Sure.
Like,
you're right. It's, like, second.
Like, drowning in a bottle of vodka.
Well, I did spend, like, a lot of money on it during quarantine, which was, like,
okay,
you know,
we're going
so it gets
into
gambling. Exactly. And they're all set up that way anyway.
Well, now, I'm so sorry to ask this question, but...
What games?
Did you make any money?
No. You never will get money back. I was playing, like, solitaire. This, like, version of solitaire. It's just, it's so embarrassing.
Now, I'm so sorry to ask this next question. Was the debt devastating?
No. It wasn't a lot. It was like, I feel like anytime I spend like $5, I'm like, that was stupid. You shouldn't have done that.
Oh, okay.
But I did it for like 2 months. It was probably like $150.
Oh, Jen.
But like that's too much money to spend on
it.
Like,
is
this,
too much
this
but
solitaire.
You're right, it's too much for a solitaire, but like, gosh, I can already tell you're just like, we are one because we, I think, really expect the best of ourselves. And
yeah,
I had a therapist that used to tell me, when I think the world is going to end, to take a second and realize that actually it's gonna keep on spinning, girly. And like, I 100%, if I'd lost $150 on solitaire, would have been like, the world is ending. That's money that I could have used for X, Y, and Z. I also have money things like separate from all that.
Oh, yeah,
and
same.
Then I had to learn, and I of course still remind myself every day, like, the world is going to continue spinning. And then she would also be like, in 5 years, will the $150 matter?
No.
And that was another,
I mean,
another
of course
mantra.
Not. But it does, like, slowly. I don't even think it's like, it's not even that bad from like, you know, I wasn't like, oh, this is so shitty. But it was like every day, just a little more shame. And like, also it was, I wish I could show the game on this podcast. It's like, it was like a tropical solitaire that was like so clearly engineered to be a gambling front. And you could join these groups. And it was like from everyone's profile pictures, it was like, okay, these are like Midwestern moms that I'm like here with. We're all just like in it together. And I kept getting kicked out of the groups because I would like try to not play the game for 2 days. And then you're like kicked out. It was a dark time.
This feels very LuLaRoe.
Yeah, it was that. I mean, it is that. It's that. It's a contained
pyramid
MLM. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm proud of you for surviving the multi-level marketing solitaire.
Yeah, you know, me too. I'm here on the other side to tell my story.
To tell your story. You did tweet that you were looking for SSRI recos.
Oh.
Are you currently?
Yeah.
We love to talk about those because famously, one guest we had early on in this podcast was Zach Noe Towers, who's an incredible comedian. Mm. And he was one of the reasons why. He like turned me on to SSRIs.
Yeah.
So I am now on Lexapro. I was speaking with another friend about their journey. So I'm always, if you're open to saying, like, what's the medication?
I'm so fucking happy that you asked that. I like just started Wellbutrin a week ago, and
I've heard great things.
Yeah, there's like a hive of like Wellbutrin fandom. Like,
let me hear y'all scream.
Yeah, it's true. I was at a comedy show and somebody, I think there's obviously a connection between SSRIs and comedy, but someone like mentioned Wellbutrin on stage and someone was like, I love Wellbutrin. And like, that's like what played in my head when my psychiatrist suggested that.
It's like, yes,
yeah,
the lottery.
It was like, that's the one that person liked. But I do think there's like a shifting mentality about it right now. I was just reading a book, which I will plug because it was an amazing book, The Red Zone by Chloe Caldwell. It just came out and it's about PMDD, which is premenstrual dysmorphic disorder, which like a lot of people don't know about, but it's basically like really, really disruptive PMS that like, and very bad like cramps and physical symptoms, but it's just not really talked about. But Prozac is like a treatment for that. And in the book, she talked about going on Prozac and she was like, I love Prozac. It's amazing. And I think it just like clicked for me that like, this is to make you happy and that's what it does. And if I'm not feeling that, there's nothing wrong with me. Like I used to feel like my energy, like my bubbliness, I guess I used to be bubbly. Now I play tropical solitaire. But I used to feel like that was like my personality. And if I wasn't happy, I wasn't like succeeding.
Or it was your fault or
yes.
There's, I know someone years ago who would feel shame about their medication and then would stop taking it as a way to like prove they didn't need it. And then course would reap the consequences and have a full spiral shift, whatever. And I remember always, like, keep this between you and me and all the people listening, but I'd always feel like a little judgmental and I was not being empathetic, but I was always like, why do you have so much pride that you're playing a game with yourself to see like how much you can suffer? And I know this is actually a thing many people do, and I'm not judging people in general, but I was almost selfishly thinking, like, self-righteously, I would never do something like that. And of course I probably do that with something else other than SSRIs, but it's just the thesis statement is like, they're there to help you and let them do their gosh darn job.
Yeah, truly. And I have had such a stigma about it for so long. And I also was just like, ugh, people are depressed. I'll never be depressed. And then I also had this side of me that was like, well, you're never going to make good art then, because all good artists are depressed. And then I was like at war with myself already. I wrote my book in under a calendar year. Like I wrote and published it. And it was...
Which is crazy, right?
Yeah, it's absurd, and I wouldn't recommend it to anyone. And I also had a full-time job in marketing at the time. It was like, I am, my body and my relationship and my mind are still recovering. But it made, it just like, I stopped doing anything but writing. And it had been the thing I wanted to do forever. Like, I wanted to write this book. And then I was like, the things I did to get that book out there, like, almost weren't worth it.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, they were worth it. I'm so happy it's done. But I'm also in this like postpartum period where the book came out in October, and now I'm like, okay, I had never pictured my life after a book came out, so now I have to think about the second book. So I'm glad you like my log line. Couples therapist disappears, but
I'm obsessed with that log line. But no, I know you're, it's like the, it's for like a theater actor, it's like the post-show blues. It's after the wedding when the person's like, now I've like have nothing else to look forward to.
Exactly. That's another one that people really say that. And I don't think that like actual postpartum, like with giving birth is this, like, I don't think it comes from the same thing, but the wedding definitely does. It's like you were looking forward to this and then it's just gone.
Oh, yeah. I think part of any creative person's life is what I've really tried to think about is the ups and the downs and the ebbs and the flows. And like, there's that whole thing that I've saw recently about a creative process, which is like, you're in love with your idea. You want everyone to know about the idea. You start to work on it. You question the idea. You realize it's the worst idea of all time. You move past that. Then you become like okay with the idea, and then you're back to thinking it's the best thing. It's like,
yeah,
there's such
you caught
a
me on
roller coaster.
You caught me on the day where I think the couples therapy one is good, but I've had days where I'm like, I can't write this. What's the point? What's happening?
Ugh. Of course, yeah. I've said this so many times that it's probably annoying to hear, but like, I was so close to not doing this podcast because I was like, what a fucking horrible idea. Who am I to think anybody would listen? And it's, you know, it's introduced me to so many great people. There are so many, the listeners are so fucking funny and cool, and like, I think that just knowing the days where you feel like shit, just knowing like, again, there's gonna have to be a change because this can't be forever.
Yeah.
And so I think I do love, you know, the title of your book, Greedy: Notes from a Bisexual Who Wants Too Much. Like, what do you when you thought about this title, like what do you want too much of?
I had always kind of been uncertain about whether I was bi. Most of the book is about like my own imposter syndrome. And I just didn't think I deserved the title because I like hadn't had a queer relationship or like successful queer hookup yet. And I like all of my friends were queer men, but like that, you know, it didn't, I was like the straight girl who hung out with queer men as I saw it. So I just didn't feel like I deserved that term. And then there was also this other side where I felt like bisexuality was such a binary term. Like, you know, I was learning about gender and learning that, like, there are many infinite genders and bisexuality seems so dated. But I also didn't identify with the term pansexual. It felt like too new. I hadn't connected to it growing up. But I had always kind of connected to the word bisexual growing up. And then I found out that it is gender inclusive, in fact, and it like does include all genders, and it always has. I mean, not always. There's always been like tension. There's always been the same amount of like transphobia and dismissiveness within the bi community as there has been like within other communities. But in general, like the bi community has really made a welcoming space for all genders. And I learned that it's really like, the opposite of bisexuality is monosexuality, which is being attracted to only one gender. So gotcha. That's like one way to think of it.
Yeah.
But I realize I've like navigated your question. But greedy, I also didn't want to like play into any of these stereotypes that about being bi. Like, I was like having a lot of threesomes. I didn't want to be like, I'm bisexual, like just because I'm having threesomes all the time. And like, I also didn't want to be seen as promiscuous, or like, I didn't want my coworkers to think about me having threesomes. Uh-huh. And so the reason I titled it the book Greedy is because it felt like the stereotype about bisexual people that was most tied to like sexuality and sexual agency that felt the best to reclaim. Because then I could reclaim both those things at the same time, like my sexual agency and my bisexuality. So,
yeah. I love that so much. I think there are so many nuances to bisexuality that people need to hear about. Because like you're saying, there are so many people, especially years ago, that were like thinking as bisexuality as one definition. And then, of course, the fuckers that are like, choose a side. You can't. What are you? And I think that, not that it's like a fashion or a scarf, but like, bi is in, girl. Like, bi is having a moment. Bi is having its moment, and for good fucking reason. And I even just learned when you were saying there about like monosexuality versus like bisexual, you are, within this definition, able to be attracted to multiple genders, to identify how you identify. And I salute you, Jen. I really do. Aww. I'm so happy to have some bi stunningness on this chaos podcast. I gotta get to the famous podcast question, Jen.
Okay.
Whose fault is it that you're bi? Who do we blame, babe?
Okay, this is a hard question. Okay, I was about to just change my answer spontaneously. Oh. But I am going to change it. I was going to say genes, because there's a lot I can talk about like, I never fit into genes. You know, there's a like metaphor, allegory thing going on.
Sure.
And then cuff genes are like bi culture, allegedly. and I have an essay about that in my book, and how that's like the only culture that bi people have, because we don't have any like bars in the real world. So like, we cling to those things.
Clinging to denim.
Yes. Always. But I'm going to change it to the movie 40 Days and 40 Nights.
Wait a minute.
It was just like, it just came to my head. But the movie is, have you seen it?
I have, and literally it's been so long. It's a 2002 movie. Tell me why this made you buy, and I know it's going to bring up my memories.
I also have to look it up, because I don't remember the name of the like female lead, but, it's Shannon Sossamon. I don't even know who that is.
She's a stunner, whoever she is.
Oh, yeah, and she's in A Knight's Tale. She had a moment. But it's Josh Hartnett and Shannon Sossamon. And the idea is that she takes, I think it's that she takes a vow that she, for Lent, that she's not going to have sex. And then he like does this really hot thing where he like runs a rose down her body, and she like has an orgasm. And I didn't know. They were very like coy about the way they said that she got off. And like, basically he does the rose thing, and then the next scene cuts to her telling her friend, and her friend's like, from a rose? You got there from a rose? And I like was young and didn't know what they meant.
I remember this.
Yeah,
this is
it's
such
vivid.
An unlocked memory, Jen. This
oh my
is
God,
such a
you're
great
welcome.
Answer. I mean, A, that woman is gorgeous. I can totally see, especially the rose like.
And she had
about...
she had a very bisexual haircut. It was like a 90s, I don't know, bob thing.
Yeah. And then, of course, coupled with Josh Hartnett, who very deservedly had many years of moments. I mean, there was something about Josh, I think, that was like, you could see yourself in school with him, but he was also drop dead gorgeous, but also like he was quiet, but also like you knew he could ram you if you needed to.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
He,
all of that.
There were so many, and like the body, the broodiness. In that movie, just so I remember, the conceit was
the. What do you mean? Like the plot?
What's the conceit? The plot of the movie was what?
The that she gives up her, also I just like outed myself as not knowing like what the word conceit means. I'm like, I'm like, what do you mean? I wrote a book.
I love that, was so beautifully honest.
It was a long pause.
Give me a synonym or abstaining thing, but what was it?
Okay, that's all I remember is that was the plot, and then it's like a rom-com.
So Josh Hartnett vows to abstain from sexual stimulation, including masturbation, for the 40 days of Lent.
Oh, it's him who does it.
That's what it says.
Not her. Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. And then he meets her and, like, wants to have sex with her, but that's how he does it.
Exactly. And then apparently, like, the whole beginning of this is that he had an obsession with his ex-girlfriend, which I guess he couldn't get off with other women because of this obsession. And so he told his brother about it, who was a Catholic priest in training. And then after he tried to fake an orgasm on a date, he learns that his ex is engaged. And so to resolve these issues, he then abstains from sex for
the
40 days of Lent.
Wow, it's so much more complex. Like, all I remember is that scene.
Oh my God, there's apparently... Yeah, I'm remembering all this now. There's a scene who he accidentally drank a Viagra-spiked drink.
Oh, yeah. Maybe it's time for a rewatch.
I think it is. Yeah. Oh, and Maggie Gyllenhaal is apparently in it as well.
Wait, what? Yeah. Maybe she's the friend. I bet she's the friend.
She must be. Wow. This is a really great look into our herstory, because it. I'm sure there can be a argument made for why that is a gay-ass movie.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Josh Hartnett's in it, but also, like, abstaining, and maybe that abstinence is, like, a bigger symbol of queer people not allowing to lean into what they actually want to do, and that forcing them to not do to communicate themselves authentically then creates bigger issues in the rest of their lives with, like, emotions and relationships. And I think I'm just
love it. I was just saying it because I was, like, definitely attracted to them both.
but of course.
But also, and that's everything, like, you
the gateway.
Said. Yes.
The gateway drug of bi-dom is, of course, and I hear this from so many guests who are bi who come on. They're like, watching this thing, they're like, oh, I'm super into that person, but I'm also into this other person that I didn't.
And then I just, like, get into the sex in general. And I used to, like, not understand what that meant, but it meant that I guess it meant I wanted to have a threesome, but it was I would like to be in the room with both of them. And I also think that my attraction to Josh Hartnett was, like, I think anyone's attraction to Josh Hartnett is some sort of internalized, like, patriarchy, like, like, homophobia, you know, like, I used to be very attracted to him and this guy who played Dino on this such a weird show. What was it called? His name is Sean Ferris, is the actor. Do you know him?
He looks like
Josh Hartnett, but
he does look like Josh Hartnett.
Yeah, they look like military guys, kind of.
Oh yeah, he's definitely familiar to me, and he totally could be Josh Hartnett's, like, cousin for sure. I've always wanted to fuck my bullies, or people who look like they would bully me. And
yes,
I'm not proud
exactly.
Of that.
I'm a little proud of that.
I mean, it would be hot, and the part of the reason why this show Heartstopper on Netflix is something you need to watch is because it's a show that illustrates what could have happened if it was a little more acceptable to be gay.
Ooh.
There are still, of course, things that they are all struggling with, but, like, they're high school aged kids, and it's so earnest and sweet and funny, and I just... People were posting that they've, like, watched it and rewatched it. And
now
that I'm, like, close to getting towards the end of it, I'm like, I will 100% be rewatching this show. I also, in my mind, while I was watching, was like, I want to send this to my family and, like, any people that want to know what it's like a little more.
Oh, wow.
It really, like, shows you the otherness of it all and what people go through and the confusion of the feelings you're having, and I just cannot say enough good things about it. I talk about it a little bit in last week's episode. I'm just fucking obsessed and want anybody who is anyone, straight, queer, otherwise, to watch it.
I'm shocked I haven't seen it. I've seen
it. Really, it came out so recently.
I know,
so
like, but I've seen everything else on TV, like every single thing. But I'm so excited.
It's hard to know what to choose to spend time on, and also to know, like, what kind of, you have to be in a specific mood for certain things. Yeah. Like, I've been really watching Dark. Crime.
Oh, I thought you meant the show Dark from a few years ago. It was like a sci-fi show. Yeah. Oh, but I do love a good crime doc.
I mean, it's fucked up. Like, I'm like, nah, I really want to see a story about someone getting brutally beaten and then, like, their killer escaping for 3 years. Like, that sounds fun. Like, I don't know where that comes from.
Just like a light night.
Yeah. When I get a little Haagen-Dazs and then watch a brutal murder. Oh my gosh, speaking of a show that is a little tough to watch, you did tweet about The Flight Attendant, and the tweet is so funny. God. You go, my favorite part of The Flight Attendant is listening to my partner complain about it, which I have to tell you, Jen, my husband and I watched the first season and really enjoyed it. We weren't sure we were going to, and really just like love her. It's such a dark, weird, twisted thing. And then we started the second season, and No, it's still a good show, and I know I'm going to be watching the whole thing.
It's not.
I was so fucking okay.
No, it's not.
I was so stressed out, Jen.
Yeah.
After one episode, we both looked at each other like, "We cannot continue this tonight. It's not the vibe."
I don't know if it was like this first season, and I needed it so badly that I didn't notice. But like, she's playing a spy. Like, she like is a spy for the CIA,
right,
which is like a spoiler, but also not. And I mean, just because it doesn't matter. And she, like, the way she hides is like the way that you would hide if you were like in improv class and someone was like, fake hide. Like, she like ducks behind a door. It's like my partner, like, every time they like refuse to watch it. There are very few things that they like put their foot down, but they go out of the room and then they come back in and then they're like, why is she doing that? Like, what is the point? But I
they're
don't
like,
think
she's literally behind a bush that has no clearance.
There's, yeah,
it's completely open.
Yeah, you know what I was watching? What I did watch right before this is Pachinko on Apple TV.
I have heard good things, but I weirdly am remiss to start an Apple TV series. I don't know who hurt me, but
well,
I need to.
Severance changed my opinion about that. Yeah.
Me too. Okay, I did do Severance, but after I waited a few weeks because I had that Apple TV baggage, but I started Severance. We finished it in a few days, and definitely. It's so good. It healed.
So good.
Can I ask you something that came up amongst friends? I want to know your take. Someone argued at a gathering that Adam Scott looks like shit, like he himself looks like shit in the show. My theory, though, is that he is supposed to look like shit because his character is going through a very shitty situation. But I think Adam Scott as a person, actor, human, still looks good.
I think it was like makeup. Not makeup, but I think it was like intentional.
Haggardness intentionally put on him. And I think he looks...
My partner always calls him, my partner has this thing they say when someone like looks weird on screen, they're always like, oh, that's Professor Funny Face. And I don't know how this began, but it like has continued. And sometimes it's like just Mr. Funny Face, like if their face isn't that funny, but like Adam Scott in that, he's a Professor Funny Face.
I wonder if it's even weirder looking than what graduates after Professor. Is like Father?
Yeah,
Father Funny Face?
Yeah, Dean Funny Face.
Provost Funny Face. God, this answer is so good. Of the 40 days and 40 nights, you know, I love a good throwback into unlocking a memory, and that is just what I needed. I do want to ask another famous podcast question, which is, Jen, if the world was ending, you could only save one character actress, who would you save?
Okay, this is actually the hardest question I've ever been asked. Like, my first instinct is Margot Martindale, but I feel like I can't say that because, like, BoJack took that from us. but by, like, making it a great joke that, like, needed to be made. But I am just obsessed with her and have been, like, ever since The Americans. But I also, I, like, did go down a bit of a rabbit hole on, like, how do you define a character actress?
Maybe always a question people are worried about.
Okay, well, How do you?
The argument I make on this podcast is that it can be an argument can be made that anyone is a character actress as long as you feel passionate about them.
Okay.
And for that, for me, that means like if they, of course, have like maybe quirks, they love a wig, or they're just like a passionate actor that you've seen in many roles that you love them in. I don't really care how different the roles are. And like last week we talked about Dolly Parton. We totally made a case for Dolly. And so I'm pretty loose. I just need, Jen, you need to just have the passion for this person.
Okay.
And that's all I request. Okay.
I still hadn't made up my mind. I feel like the most solid answer is Tilda. Like
Tilda Swinton.
I feel like the standing happened and then it like went away, and I feel like it's like due for a burgeoning. And I also just really want a biopic. Like I want a Tilda biopic so badly.
About Tilda Swinton?
Yeah, I like need to know everything about her.
Wait. Does Tilda play Tilda?
Yeah, probably. Have you seen Suspiria, the like recent Suspiria?
No.
She plays like an elderly man, and she plays like a witch, like the headmistress witch, witch. Like I love when she can play multiple characters in one film, and like the whole thing is just her. I didn't think she was the one I was going to go with, but I think that it's the In the event that the world is ending, like she could perform any like Shakespearean play, all playing all the roles. Like you're covered forever.
You're covered because what's so brilliant about her is that she's so weird that she can bring a weirdness to every role, but it's a different type of weirdness.
Yes.
And you're so like locked into what she is doing.
Yeah.
Did you ever see the Twitter account that was like, not Tilda Swinton, I think.
Oh, yes.
And one of the people behind that is Carrie O'Donnell, who came on the podcast last year. And they were the most absurd tweets that were like, so weirdly Tilda Swinton. And that is honestly one of the things that made me fall in love with her even more.
Yeah.
Was just like how warped those tweets were. And she is such a great answer for the character actress. But now I'm curious, what were some of your backups?
Okay, I had like so many. Let me get my notes app. She wasn't even on my list, but she's the only one that like gun to my head I could defend.
Okay.
Okay, let's see. Sarah Paulson.
Great.
Was like, that one also felt a little too easy. Tilda, it does feel like during the age of the not Tilda Swinton Twitter was like the peak of Tilda fandom. But yeah. I want like a retrospective. Also, Ann Dowd.
Great answer.
Have you seen Mass?
No, I haven't. God, I'm really not.
It's like, it was clearly a quarantine movie, but it's Ann Dowd, Martha Plimpton, who was also on my list, and I don't know, two men. And I like didn't know, but it's basically, I don't want to spoil anything, but it's just the four of them in a room, and it's like an incredibly powerful movie. It's basically a play.
And it's called Mass?
It's called Mass. They all like go to a church to have a conversation, and it's like a really, really powerful movie.
How off-Broadway of them.
I know. Okay, and then the other two who I had on here was Jean Smart, who I'm like obsessed with, but I just feel like she's transcended character actress thanks to the beauty and power of Hacks, but also just... Mm-hmm. Everything.
They've recently come out with promotional material for season two for Hacks. She looks so fucking hot.
Oh my God. I know. And her like Hollywood Walk of Fame ceremony.
Oh my God. And the thing is Jean Smart is having the deserved moment. And I think that you are going to be right that Tilda Swinton will have that moment in the next, 3 years?
She's like more, Tilda's like more avant-garde, obviously. But
oh yeah. I just think that she's like, they're going to be like, there's going to be a vehicle for her.
Yeah. Yeah. But I was just rewatching Legion. I don't know if you ever watched that on FX.
I didn't. No.
I mean, it's pretty interesting. I had only seen the first season, but Jean Smart, I completely forgot she's in it, and she's like great in it. And then I was remembering her in Watchmen. She's like so phenomenal.
Yeah.
And Mare of Easttown, she like steals I mean, she doesn't steal it because
you're right. She's, I'd forgotten about her.
She's everywhere.
I keep forgetting about her, Mayor of Easttown. She's the mom, right?
Yeah, and like, she has that like moment where, which is like so iconic, when she is not supposed to be eating the ice cream, so she puts it in a bag of frozen peas and eats it, which is like such a pro move. I loved
relatable
it.
Relatable queen.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to be going to get some ice cream this evening.
You
I mean,
it sounds like you deserve it.
I think I do.
Oh, and then I had one more.
Please.
Charlotte Rampling.
I know the name, but I don't, can't picture.
Okay, you should Google. I was wondering if this was going to hit. But have you seen Benedetta?
Okay, I've seen Benedetta, and I'm looking at her now, and this is all coming back.
Yeah, she's like so fantastically talented. I saw 45 Years, which it was basically like a film made for her to get a Best Actress Oscar, but which I don't think she got. But in Benedetta, she's like so hilarious to me because she like spits in someone's face and like, or she, no, she kisses someone in an amazing way at the end. I just think she always brings an X factor.
And she's also stunning.
Yeah, I mean, gorgeous.
Her life is crazy. I mean, I'm reading some stuff about her now. Like her sister, I think it said her sister died by suicide in 1966. Mm. They had performed in a cabaret act together.
Oh.
She is born in England. Her spouse was Jean-Noël Tassé. She's like all these French ex-husbands.
Mm.
Just a lot.
And she was in a Woody Allen movie, which I found when looking at pictures of her. And I was like, ugh.
Oh boy. Oh boy.
Yeah. It's like you can like see her discomfort in the stills from the movie now when you look at them now. Yeah, I don't know. I just felt like I had to give her some love because I will like see a movie if I know she's playing a supporting character.
God, I love that so much. You had such a well-researched list.
Answers. No, just this is me being bisexual and not being able to make any type of decision. A bisexual Libra with ADHD.
Come on, Brand.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I'm a bisexual Libra with ADHD. Hi, bisexual Libra with ADHD.
Yeah,
that's
me.
AA intro. Oh my God. I have to do reference to one of my favorite things I've seen you post is about one of the reasons why you're bi is your dad let you get an exercise tape of Carmen Electra.
Oh, I should have said that. You're right. I absolutely, which is true. That is true. That was like the first erotic film I ever watched.
I mean, literally, Carmen Electra is one of the most sex generating human beings. I almost thought I was straight when she was in Scary Movie.
And she gets stabbed like 100 times.
She gets stabbed in the implants, and her parents are driving, and her mom is sucking her dad's dick, and then he drives over her, and then she goes, "What was that?" And he goes, "Nothing." And then he puts her head back down. She goes, "Oh." It's like disgusting and like such a year 2000 comedy. But Carmen Electra, I can't believe this is so devastatingly gay, is that she did a run through the sprinklers that was like making fun of hot girls running away from the killer. All of a sudden the music plays, she's in slow motion, and she does a head twist that she flies her wet hair, her then hands ride up her body around her big old breasts, and then she's like making like a very sex face at the camera. I took it upon myself to master that move, and at pool parties I would be like, "Do you want to see my Carmen Electra?" And I'd be like a quote-unquote straight 13-year-old, and I would do the run, and then I would flick my hair and around my hands.
Oh my God.
Body. And people like, "Ha, you're so funny." Meanwhile, I'm sure
I love
it. I just like wasn't hearing everyone be like at the same time, like, "Fag." But like, it just was, I just could not help but want to be her. She was so hot. She's so hot.
Yeah, she's so hot and like knows it. And I mean, it is just like unabashed celebration of feminine sexuality.
Yes.
And the aerobic striptease was like a phenomenal concept. It was just like, here's how to, like, here, you can use a chair and you can get your workout in and learn how to, like, please your man. And my dad bought me the box set when I was, like, 15. And
we stand an ally.
Yeah,
we do. So wait, I have a question for you.
Yes, yes.
Who is another celebrity that you have a crush on or attracted to that identifies as female?
I'm trying to think. Aubrey Plaza.
Aubrey Plaza and Carmen Electra are both, and it's within the rules of your relationship or your life as pause, whatever it is.
Yeah, they'd
be. And you would be able to hook up with only one of them, though. Who do you do, Aubrey or Carmen?
Oh, that's a good question. Because you get, I don't know. I feel like you want to date. This is like a fuck, marry, kill, but no kill.
It is.
Probably Carmen Electra, I think.
Okay, fuck, marry, kill, Carmen Electra, Aubrey Plaza, and the girl from 40 Days and 40 Nights.
Oh, okay. Okay, I think just to achieve a goal, I have to fuck the girl from 40 Days and 40 Nights.
Love.
Wow, this completely changed. I have to marry Aubrey Plaza and kill Carmen Electra. After running through the sprinklers.
Yeah, at least you get to see her sexually run away from you.
Yeah, exactly. She's, yeah.
That's like the fucked up version of the game, which is like, okay, so how would you kill her?
Yeah. It's like, yeah.
You're like, I guess I would. Actually, don't answer that. It's, wow, these are great answers. Jen, I want to thank you for coming on this gay-ass podcast. Before we say goodbye, though, I have to ask you a question you are not prepped for.
Okay.
Which is, Jen, what is the best Whoopi Goldberg film?
Oh, Sister Act?
Like, one or two?
One? I'm outing myself. I haven't seen a Whoopi Goldberg film.
Wow.
But you know
your
what?
Honesty is I know. I just want to thank you for the honesty.
I haven't in a long time. I absolutely had like a while ago.
You've seen The Lion King.
Yeah, that's true.
She voices one of the hyenas in The Lion King. You can say that.
I could say that, and I probably should. What I'll say is I just read the like cult book for just like alt women in New York, My Year of Rest and Relaxation by Otessa Moshfegh. And in that book, the character is like obsessed with antidepressants and Whoopi Goldberg movies. And so it actually ties this podcast up with like a perfect bow.
That is plagiarism on my life, and I will be going to court.
Yeah.
That is a great bow. That is a gorgeous bow. Tell me, Jen Winston, where can people follow you?
You can follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at this point, under @generous with a J. And you can get my book, Greedy, Notes from a Bisexual Who Wants Too Much, wherever books are sold.
Oh, we love to see it. Definitely get Greedy, Notes from a Bisexual Who Wants Too Much. Follow Jen. Subscribe to the bi-monthly newsletter. And Jen, thank you so much for coming on. This was such a joy.
Yay, thank you for having me.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.